You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The truth, right, about sports, we wouldn't watch if we always knew how it was going to play out. And while some sports have been labeled more predictable than others, we've certainly this spring and now summer have had our fill of stories from the category of you can't make this stuff up. I kind of felt that way about Jon Rahm going into the U.S. Open. I wasn't sure why he was the betting favorite. Yes, his game, he's been right there on the cusp. And certainly when he had to bow out of that most recent tournament because of the COVID protocols, it was unfortunate. He was in line to, if not win that tournament, make a whole lot of money. And then he gets cleared through protocols and he gets to the U.S. Open and he's noticeably contrite, and yet his game almost like it hasn't missed a beat. Like he picked up where he left off. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Big deal for him, too, the fact that his first major win comes on Father's Day.
As a father, on my first Father's Day with my dad here, to get this one done the way I did, you know, on top of that, you add the fact that we got engaged here as well. And, you know, I have a very happy life. I have, you know, I can say I'm extremely happy off the golf course, but this one might steal the show for a couple of days.
For a couple of days. I love how he says that. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket Can. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. We're pleased to welcome Matt Adams from the Golf Channel and Fairways of Life Radio. Matt up getting ready for his first show of the week. And John Rahm has been through quite a journey, Matt. Even just the last month has been one end of the emotional spectrum to the other. How would you describe what he's been through over these last few weeks?
I would describe it as a roller coaster. Amy, how are you? It's interesting where you were talking about leading into this. You know, why was it that the bookies around the world, the media, all installed John Rahm as the favorite coming in? And John Rahm's been knocking on the door for a while. He's a young guy, but he's been knocking on the door for a while in that he tied for fifth at the Masters. He tied for eighth at the PGA Championship. Here was a U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. And remember, he's won at Torrey Pines before in the Farmers. And interestingly, when he won it, he shot a final round of 65 compared to yesterday, where he tied the low round of the week with a 67 in that final round. And he was coming in admitting, because John Rahm's, just like many of the young players, Rory comes to mind, Jordan comes to mind, and there's more, who are extremely honest. There's a candor in the game right now that hasn't really existed in many, many years in terms of the information they share. And John shared with us that he was playing what he thought was the best golf of his life. And aside from that, he had control over all of his faculties. And that directly relates back to the question you asked me of the last month. Here was John Rahm. He got his vaccination shot, but it was not outside of the, what do you call it, incubation window, 14 days.
Gotcha.
And so as a result, when he was tested, he showed positive. He was up by 6 strokes at the time. Mm-hmm. And there were many, myself included, that felt, wait a minute, if you have people on site and it's okay for the fans to be that close and all the rest, surely there's other risks that are out there that are more prominent than a player who, if you had to, you could send out there alone or send them out there with markers and scoring officials who had already been vaccinated, et cetera, put him in a mask, make sure he's away from people. But to have him withdraw from the tournament altogether seemed very harsh, and it seemed as though that decision in and of itself was a little bit behind the times. And instead of being the victim, and it was a microcosm of John Rahm as a man now, I think, John Rahm said no. He said, these are the rules. This is the way it was set up. It's set up with caution and with safety as being paramount, and it's okay. And we all went, wow. To take it with such grace the way that he did really changed, I think, everybody's way that they were reacting to it. And all of that, the reason I called it a microcosm is that pretty much everybody knows now that when John Rahm came out, here was a kid when he came from Spain to the United States to play golf for Tim Mickelson, who is now on Phil's bag for brother Phil, that he couldn't even speak English. He learned to speak the language essentially by listening to rap songs. And this is a very determined young man. And he did have an issue, though, and his issue was anger. And sometimes that's not that unusual when you have very talented young players, because there's a level of expectation that if something doesn't go their way, somehow fate denied them what they deserved. And as we got to know John Rahm better, as John Rahm got to know John Rahm better on the stage that is the biggest in the world that he now competes on, he got better and better and better at controlling that. And he shared that experience and journey with the world through the media as well. He talked about it whenever he was asked. So there are so many different levels that this is impressive. And it was the combination of all these things that led to that victory, in my view.
And now is about to become the number one player in the world again with this victory. And here's some kind of a quirky stat that I didn't know until I saw it this weekend. There only been, what, 4 major winners who've ever birdied the final 2 holes of their last round. And here he is with the birdies on 17 and 18, and he's not in the final group. It's not like his birdie on 18 assured him the victory. But boy, what did we see? The great fire. I loved it. It was almost reminiscent of a Tiger Woods type of fist pump and the roars behind him. So maybe not the anger anymore, but still the intensity and the emotion. And I love to see that on the golf course.
Well, that's the beauty of it, Amy, is that he was able to continue to hold on to the passion and channel that without losing himself in rage, as he had done previously in the younger days of his career, even though, as I mentioned, he's still a young man. Those 4 come from behind victories that you mentioned. Specifically, the 4 were in the U.S. Open. There were others in other major championships, but the 4 in the U.S. Open that put him in the company of, which is remarkable, that's why I circled back around to it, Ben Hogan in 1953, Jack Nicklaus in 1980, and Tom Watson in 1982. He is the first man ever from Spain to win the U.S. Open, and he joins, of course, Seve and Jose Maria and Sergio as the three other major champions from his home country. So in so many different ways, it's remarkable, and maybe it was unfair to him or too soon for me to be thinking about the Ryder Cup in this context, but it is only coming up in September, a few months down the road, and I couldn't help but think, how much of a handful will he be for the American Ryder Cup teams over the next, 10 years, five years, whatever time frame you want to put it at his pinnacle? I think it's more than five. It may even be more than 10. But to see his fire, remember, he was 1-1 against his hero, Tiger Woods, in France at the last Ryder Cup, and he beat him. So it's just at so many different levels, we're seeing the emergence of a true global, and by the information we were just displaying too, truly historic player.
Matt, I forgot all about the Ryder Cup. Are the rosters, there's so much going on right now. Are the rosters already set?
No, they're in flux. But here's the thing, because they wanted desperately to have it last year, and in many ways the European Tour wanted and needed to have it because that the money that comes in from the Ryder Cup is important to both sides, obviously, but it's particularly important to on the European side indeed. And so they had adjusted how people can get on the team, essentially allowing the captains to pick more people that are, for lack of a better phrase, hot right now. So on the U.S. side, for your United States audience, Amy, there's only 6 automatic people to make the team versus in the past where that would have been obviously a higher number. Mm-hmm. So there's only 6. So Steve Stricker and his vice captains will have 6 captain picks coming up. So I know that's a story for another day, but all of it is starting to churn.
Matt Adams from the Golf Channel and Fairways of Life show, which you can get on demand, whether it's an app, whether it's on YouTube, all kinds of places. Matt's everywhere. He never goes to sleep. Seriously, my producer Dave and I were just talking about this. We used to get you in the final hour of the show, and now it's like maybe the first hour, maybe the second hour. You're just up all the time after these majors.
It is crazy. Yeah, I had to do a Jody Mack show on CBS Radio last night. I've got you now. I've got CNBC coming up at 5:40.
Oh.
And then I go on the air at 8. But it's a fun run. It's a good reason to have all this, right?
Yes, Eastern time for sure. After hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I didn't necessarily mean to get off on this tangent, but while we're talking the international flavor, how do the Tokyo Olympics factor in when we're still in the bulk of the season for these guys?
Well, first of all, the Tokyo Olympics factor in a big level with all the sports the same way. There's the enthusiasm, the excitement that goes with any Olympic game, and we're all looking at it going, geez, we can't wait for it to happen. But then there's this shadow that's cast because of COVID and what ultimately, there's a lot of cries for people saying the game should be suspended or be delayed because Japan is still having flare-up issues. But on the other side, and John Rahm spoke a lot about that, where he said, in terms of what they're doing and how they're doing it, they are certainly not making it easy for the athletes. He wasn't only talking about golfers, but relative to the golfers themselves, where they'll be staying is not close to the golf course, et cetera, et cetera. I guess you have to kind of look at that and shrug your shoulders a little bit and go, well, it's the Olympics. Logistics probably aren't easy for a lot of Olympic athletes and probably haven't been for years and years. You got to make a choice whether you'll be there or not. I haven't heard definitively if John Rahm intends to be there. He obviously would qualify very quickly representing Spain. My guess is that he will be, but I think the jury is still out on that.
Mm. Well, have you heard a lot of the other golfers talk about it too, considering it? I mean, it's such an international sport, so there's obviously a lot of opportunity there.
Yes, but the interesting thing is the way you just phrased it, considering it. The it is both considering not going and considering going. So, yes, I have heard it on both sides quite a bit.
Mm. Matt Adams is with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. So at one point, as they're making the turn and they're getting into this back nine on Sunday, the leaderboard is this crowded kind of who's who with Rory McIlroy and Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau and all these names that you would recognize and know. Of course, Louis Oosthuizen and, yes, John Rahm. And then it was like steadily you start to see some of the other contenders just drop like a rock. I mean, Bryson, of course, he had the double bogey on 13. He had a quadruple bogey on 17. Rory was frustrated. I mean, Brooks missed some putts. What happened on that back nine?
The final holes of the U.S. Open, in fairness. It's not unusual to see that, to see players struggling. If you look at what Jon Rahm did in those final holes compared to everybody else in the field, is he had better control of his ball striking, better control of his game, and I think ultimately, when you get right down to it, he had better control of his mind and his emotions, which is ironic, isn't it, because of how we started this conversation, talking about emotions in the past getting the better of him. But Jon Rahm, for the day yesterday, had 14 greens in regulation. He hit the last seven greens in regulation. That is a very important stat. The day prior on Saturday, Jon Rahm had 33 putts. Yesterday, Jon Rahm had 28 putts. If you look at what consumes players in any major championship, and certainly because of the setup of U.S. Opens, they're consumed by areas where nerves are exposed. If you look at what Louis Oosthuizen did, particularly coming down the stretch where he lost on 16 and 17 shots to the left. When I say lost on 17, he physically had a ball fall down off the into what they now call, they find them as penalty areas or a hazard, if you please.
A canyon.
It was a canyon, and ironically, just a day or two before, they had video of a big rattlesnake going down into that area, and it was a bit of a metaphor, wasn't it? So the funny thing is that when you see something like that happen, it causes you to go, wait a minute, the player's starting to do something that they really haven't done all week, and we see it in those final stanzas of a competition. Well, that's nerves. Oftentimes what you see, and you mentioned, for example, like Brooks Koepka, you'll see players who are good putters or even aggressive putters start to leave putts slightly short, and with a right-handed putter, oftentimes the putt goes to the right because they're not closing the toe of the putter. And again, that's just tightness coming into play. And so they're losing their sense of rhythm, and they're not using their small muscles as much as they had previously. So we saw all those things starting to consume everyone around Jon Rahm at the same time that Jon Rahm was doing the opposite. Not only was he not seemingly consumed technically with those that were devouring those around him, but he was playing better in the cauldron that he was in. So the combination of those two things was absolutely remarkable. And as you noted, those putts that he made on 17 and 18, everywhere on social media now, they have them side by side, the two videos running, you know, left to right, down the hill, fist bump afterwards. if the frame is close enough on him making those putts, you can't tell which hole was which. That's how dialed in he was with what he did.
Mm. Torrey Pines forever, to me, at least in part, will be Tiger Woods' 2008 U.S. Open. And for the longest time, that was the last major that he had won until the recent Masters. What do you remember about his win there in 2008?
A lot of things. I remember that the way the golf course changed character. And we saw it again with this U.S. Open. And it's a credit to the USGA that, you know, you go to a great golf course and you don't mess with it too much. Sure, you let the rough grow out and you squeeze in the fairways. But after that, kind of let Mother Nature do her thing. And you may have noticed even yesterday that as Mother Nature had been pounding that golf course throughout the course of the week with very little help, she was starting to brown out. But as a result, you also start to get thinner areas in the rough, which changed from the start of the week to the end of the week, which I actually like. I mean, I don't have a problem with thick rough at the U.S. Open because everyone's playing the same golf course and that's how it goes. But I do like when nature starts to go, you know what, because of an angle through a tree or what have you, the sun's going to hit this area in such a way that it's going to dry it out and brown it out. And we saw balls going in those areas and players able to get a club behind it. I did think it was a little bit odd that, you know, Louis Oosthuizen didn't try to go for the green in 2 and 18. I do think questions will be asked about that. I'm curious what his thoughts are. I believe from what we could see with the lie that there was grass between his club and the ball, and there was no way to get the club cleanly on the back of the ball. And what that does is it provides, there's three ways that can go. Either it comes out like a dud, you end up hitting the shot that you actually envision, or it hits what they call a flyer, Amy, which means that the grass gets squished between the ball and the club face, and the water that's in that grass fills the grooves, so you get no spin, and it causes, you know, you can hit a shot considerably farther than what you were trying to hit.
Ah.
And I mean, if that happened, I think we all would have went, hey, it happened because he was trying to be aggressive to win the U.S. Open. But ultimately, he took more loft and laid up and left himself with a near impossible shot to half the hole. So I do think that that's going to come up in conversation. But again, that's an aside. So for when it comes right down to it, to me, Tiger's chip in at 17 on Saturday. Certainly what Tiger did on 18 on Sunday with that miracle putt before he went into the playoff and all the heroics that we saw there against Rocco too. Yeah, there was a lot of that flooding back. It was really interesting that, you know, to have Tiger rehabilitating right now. There's some recent video of him hobbling around with it doesn't look like a hard cast in his right leg, but he's definitely still got the leg covered and protected. All of that was kind of into play this week, and Tiger was very much in everybody's mind because of, as you outlined, that was the last time that we saw U.S. Open there. But I certainly think that the merits of what took place in the days that are behind us now added another incredible chapter to Torrey Pines that will rival even Tiger's win in 2008 in many ways.
John Rahm, a worthy champion, first major win on Father's Day, always the beauty of the U.S. Open wrapping up on this weekend. So you can find Matt on Twitter at Matt Adams FOL. So not only Golf Channel, he's doing TV and radio this morning, but also doing his own Fairways of Life show that starts live 8 o'clock Eastern time. And you can get it on demand 24/7. Just check out fairwaysoflife.com or look on YouTube. Matt, we appreciate you squeezing us in. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes. It's always great to
Pleasure.
Talk to you.
Always fun, Andy. Thanks. See ya.
Bye. I love Matt. Matt and I have been friends for, oh my gosh, a long time. And I will take credit for being the first one to ever introduce him here to CBS Sports Radio. And now, yes, Jody Mack and others use him because he is the best. I always learn something, lots of technical stuff with Matt, but also great emotion from the sport. John Rahm is, in fact, I feel like many of you are listening and then taking our poll for Man Crush Monday because Rahm has moved into the lead in our poll. So on Twitter, After Hours CBS, it happened just while we were talking to Matt, and then also on our Facebook page. Yeah, Rahm has now got the nose out in front. I'm not going to tell you who the other two that are right behind him, but he was trailing and then made a big push as we're talking to Matt. So really cool U.S. Open moment for him. And I'm excited to see which golfers we get at the Ryder Cup and which ones we get at the Olympics, because those are two amazing international competitions that are on the horizon. 855-212-4227. Was the Nets season a big failure now that they didn't reach the Eastern Conference Finals?
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
They're shorthanded in my era. Pollock trying to move it far side and out. 10 seconds to go. Loose in front. Ryan McDonough walks around backhand. Oh, my goodness. Ryan Pollock saved the game. The horn sounds. The Islanders hang on. They win it 3-2. Ryan Pollock in the crease. Blocked the shot that would have tied it for Tampa. Instead, the Islanders tie the series at 2 games apiece. And there'll be a game 6 back here at the Coliseum on Wednesday night.
You know, McDonough got a puck walking down, and Barley came out and challenged, and he made a heck of a play with the spinorama, and the net was open, and I just tried to make myself big and take it away, and, you know, I was able to get it. And, it's obviously you hear the sound, the clock go, and all the boys jump on you. It's a good feeling.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We have this feature called Save of the Week. I don't remember which night we do it. Maybe it's Wednesday night. Maybe it's Thursday night. But we're coming back to this moment with Ryan Pollock of the Islanders, because as he talks about on MSG following that call, this was literally in the last nanosecond of the Islanders' win against the Lightning in game number 4 on Saturday. They're clinging to a 1-goal lead. So they had started out like a house on fire, had a 3-0 lead in this game before the Lightning managed to put 2 in the back of the net. And so here they are trying to hold off the defending Stanley Cup champions. And Ryan McDonough seemingly has a wide open net until defenseman Ryan Pollock makes what may be the defensive play of the year I mean, you're going to see this over and over. In fact, producer Dave, if you want to go and find the GIF, there's GIFs, there's videos, everything, which is why I was later joking about the Brooke Lopez block shot on Kevin Durant, that should be a GIF because Ryan Pulock had one. So see defense is oh so critical. And here's the funny part. Barry Trotz didn't even see it. He was watching the Jumbotron because he had players who were standing on the bench in the final seconds of this game four. And so Trotz had to watch it on the screen because his vision of the goal was blocked.
That's the great thing about our game is, you know, we can bring you out of your seats right to the last minute. So what a save by Pulley. Obviously, that will be remembered.
He joked that I would say it was never in doubt. It looked like it was going into the net until Pulley, as they call him, slid across and saved the day. So that's why Ryan is in our Man Crush Monday poll, because even as we're watching the end of Game 7 between the Nets and the Bucks, social media has this microburst of tweets and reaction to what happened at the end of this Islanders Lightning game. So pretty sweet. And of course, Islanders fans did themselves proud. A couple more incredible renditions of the national anthem at the Nassau Coliseum. So you know the Islanders are about to open up a new home, or they will sometime in the fall. And so this is their last run potentially to get to a Stanley Cup final. And to have it be at the Coliseum, the place they call the barn, the place that fits in like a glove. And it's got so many memories there, of course, championship banners. But it's been amazing to see the fans, and not just fans back in the arena, but fans who have brought all that heart and all that voice and the emotion and the intensity. And my mom even said to me, so my mom watches a couple hours of the news every night, and she was watching Fox News one night last week, and she said, did you see the national anthem at the Nassau Coliseum? The Islanders game, they played it back on the news and it was amazing. I was like, well, mom, she said, is that something you talk about on your show? And I said, oh, trust me, we have. But I thought it was really cool that it was used in multiple other outlets where people who are not sports fans could see that the Islanders fans, they essentially drown out the national anthem singer of choice because they take over and sing so lustily. Good for you. It's a good look, and it's a great sound. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Asking you about the Nets and whether or not this was a failure to not reach the Eastern Conference Finals, that they put together this team with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. KD didn't play at all last year. Kyrie played sparingly but was hurt for a good portion of the season, and then, of course, opted out of the bubble, didn't go with the team to the bubble. I mean, half their roster didn't go to the bubble. They ended up signing a bunch of guys just so they could put together a team and actually played really well. Was it Jacques Vaughn? Was that the coach? That was the interim coach, right? And he had them playing really well, though it wasn't. I mean, a lot of those guys aren't even on the roster now. And so they bring in Steve Nash, and Nash has, well, he gets James Harden handed to him, but he's got his big three as a unit together, only 8 regular season games. They start out the playoffs healthy, but then it's Harden gone with a hammy, and then it's Kyrie with an ankle. We never did see Kyrie again after the ankle, and it's not necessarily these players' faults. There's a lot of guys out there who are dealing with injuries. Think about the Lakers, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James. I mean, we could go on and on. Some injuries that I don't know that you could rack up to the short or quick turnaround, but definitely the wear and tear on their bodies in the second half of the season following the All-Star break, when all these teams are averaging almost 4 games per week, and then you factor in travel. So there's a lot of wear and tear, and there have been a lot of notable injuries, but no one's going to feel bad for these teams because it's a war of attrition, right? So they still managed to force a Game 7, had it on their own court. But even if you factor in the injuries, James Harden, not quite himself, nearly a triple-double on Saturday, but not quite himself. Is it just bad luck, in your opinion? Or did they fall flat and come up way short of their goals? I mean, there are a lot of people, I have the hiccups for some reason. There are a lot of people in the New York area, in our New York affiliate, WFAN, 101.9 or AM 66. So the New York audience, maybe you have different perspectives than what's outside New York City, but there are a lot of hosts and analysts who believe that it was championship or bust. That may not be fair, but you know, life is not fair and sports are certainly not fair. We have one guy who works with us who fills in when producer Dave is out, and he has been wearing the same Brooklyn Nets hat for as long as I have known him. And when Kyrie got hurt, I asked him how he was doing, and he was like, "It's not fair." That was his reaction. "I've been waiting so long, it's not fair." And then when they came back in game number 5, the man was walking on the moon. But, you know, producer James, who will be with us not this week, but next week, right, producer Dave? Right, so James, we'll get his take. We'll see what he thinks. But I dared not text him because I felt bad. I didn't want it to sound like I was rubbing it in. But I would say that the expectations didn't match the ultimate result, fair or unfair. I mean, there are much higher expectations for this franchise, especially when they finish as the number 2 seed in the East and battle back and forth with the Sixers for that top seed. And to have game 7 on your own court. Do you know it's the first time in Milwaukee and Atlanta franchise history that they've ever won a game 7 on the road? So we had told you to wrap up last week that in NBA history, the home team wins game 7 78% of the time. Not only did we see both the road teams grab the victories this weekend, but neither franchise had ever won a game 7 away from home. So a lot of demons stared down and conquered. 855-212-4227. By the way, Chris King with The Voice on the Islanders, with The Voice on the Islanders radio network.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Swings at the first pitch. Deep left center field. Gone! Number 23 on the season for Guerrero. And it is 2-0 Blue Jays.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I love Dan Shulman. I've been saying that for years. He's doing the Blue Jays play-by-play now as opposed to the national duties that he used to do when we worked for the same network. But, man, anytime I get a chance to hear him, whether it's in a talk show forum or whether it's doing play-by-play, he is one of the best, always one of my favorites. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So if you've checked out our Man Crush Monday poll, you may notice that there is no Vladimir Guerrero Jr. despite home run number 23 for the Blue Jays, which leads the majors, at least the last time I checked, which was about, 8-9 hours ago. So unless somebody passed him, did Fernando Tatis have another home run? So we did not put Vlad into our Man Crush Monday poll, but I would like to tell you, peek behind the curtain, that producer Dave and I did have a discussion about who else should go in this poll. So we ended up including, yes, John Rahm, first major U.S. Open winner about to be number one player in the world. Devin Booker, first ever triple-double in his first ever conference finals game for the Phoenix Suns as they protect the home court against the Clippers despite 34 points from Paul George. Kevin Huerter, a career playoff high, 27 points for him in a game 7 for the Hawks on the road at Philadelphia. And then we just talked about, it's definitely going to be our save of the week, Ryan Pulock, who I understand many of you may not have the name recognition, but if you have not seen the still shot of the save, or actually I think I might have saved the video of it myself on Twitter, but check out our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. I mean, it's phenomenal. His timing was impeccable, but also think about how fast the game is going and the clock is winding down and it seems to be a cavernous wide open net. And all of a sudden he fills up that space and comes away with a block that's save them from going into sudden death. I don't know what would have happened in sudden death, but it definitely saved the Islanders from seeing their 3-goal lead disappear against the defending Stanley Cup champs. And you know, the sudden death is all bets are off. So that's our Man Crush Monday poll, but we very easily could have put Vlad Guerrero Jr. in that as well, as he's been so much fun to watch. One of the great young superstars in Major League Baseball that I hope will capture more of your attention as we get into summer. Though, as I said last week, the boys of summer are getting the shaft because the NBA and the NHL are not done with their playoff runs. And of course, before you know it, the NFL will be kicking off training camp. Can you believe that? Training camps, the first ones, producer Dave, didn't we check? And the very first ones are July 21st, Steelers and Cowboys. So a month from Monday, the Steelers and Cowboys are allowed to open camp because they're playing in the long-awaited Hall of Fame game in Canton. A few days later, you've got all the rest of the training camps. There's a unified training camp opener this year. And so everybody else will be in camp by the end of July. That's where we're at. So, yes, the boys of summer, they've been taking up residence on the back burner a little bit, but we'll try not to forget all about them. I kid because I care. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Would you like some more baseball? How about we give you two opposite ends of the spectrum? Okay, so should we want good news or bad news first? What do you think, producer Dave? Good news or bad news first?
Let's get the good news out of the way.
Out of the way. I like that.
Well, the bad news is so much more fun.
The New York Yankees have 19 comeback wins this season. That includes Sunday when they also became a footnote to history. Now, very soon they may have the record all to themselves, but they tied baseball's record. I'd have to go back and see how far back it was, but 3 triple plays in a single season, and we're not even at the midway point yet, but pretty amazing to watch it play out.
Well, here's the 1-0 to Murphy. Run is lead at first and second. No one out. Pitch. Hit on the ground at third. Urshela steps on the back, goes to second, 2, on to first. A triple play! A triple play! Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win! The second such triple play in the last few days. A ground ball to Urshela. He stepped on third. He threw for the double play to LeMahieu. He fired it first to Gittens for the triple play.
That is John Sterling on the Yankees radio network. And Aaron Boone says he knew that was happening from the time it came off the bat. Now, that's different than, I can't even go back and give you all of the numbers. Let's see. Tell me if I'm close on their triple play they had. What was it, Thursday night that they had the triple play? There was something like 1-3-6-5-6-2-6 or something like that. It was the only, I probably am off a little bit there, but it was the only combination, that combination of a triple play that's ever happened in baseball history. And so they they get these 2 triple plays in the span of several days, record tying 3rd triple play of the season. And Aroldis Chapman, who's been a little shaky, gets bailed out a couple of times by his defense, even if it doesn't look quite as neat as what Sunday's did.
2 huge ones with Chappie on the mound late in the game, obviously. But I'll tell you what, it's exciting to be a part of that when it ends the game, in a tight game. So great job by the guys.
Dude, I was close. I just looked. 1-3-6-2-5-6. I might have added another 6 in there, another throw to the shortstop, but I was pretty close. That was Thursday at Buffalo against the Blue Jays, and then this one at Yankee Stadium against the A's. And so pretty amazing to think about how they've done it multiple times, but also when they absolutely had to have it. I enjoy those rare moments in sports. It's like a rare bird sighting, right? And so triple plays, those are kind of cool. I don't suppose we can say that no hitters are rare anymore. So at least we'll give you the triple play rarities, except I have been looking and I'd have to do a deeper Google search. Oh, here we go. Found it. Let's see. Yes, tied a major league record for most in a season, last accomplished by the Chicago White Sox in 2016. But, oh, here's your nerd alert. Nerd alert! And no, I'm not reciting this from memory. I'm looking right now. The triple plays have happened over the course of 31 days, so essentially a month. The shortest span ever for three by a major league club. Nerd alert! So the Yankees have got some crazy combination. Plus, they're the only major league team that's ever had three triple plays in the span of just 31 days. So that's your good news, because that's fun, right? It's this rare little bit of info. It's nerdy. It's fun. John Sterling did a great job. Well, opposite end of the spectrum, I give you the Diamondbacks.
First pitch. Broken bat. Ground ball to second. Lux in the shift, underhands to first, and the Dodgers win it. So the Dodgers hang on. They beat the Diamondbacks here today, 9-8. Feeling fortunate they got the win. Handing the Diamondbacks their 17th consecutive loss in this ballgame.
Yikes. As in yikes. Greg Schulte on the Diamondbacks radio network. It's hard to lose that many games in a row in Major League Baseball. I know they're facing the Dodgers right now, and the Dodgers are playing great again after they kind of went through their swoon in the month of May when they had a bunch of injuries, and they're still dealing with some injuries. But Arizona, worst record in Major League Baseball, even worse than the Orioles, who finally got a victory over the weekend. Worse than the Texas Rangers, who've dropped six in a row. 17 consecutive losses. And I've said this before, but I think it's worth noting again. The NL West has three of the best teams in Major League Baseball and also the worst team in Major League Baseball. Yikes. That's another yikes. I feel like it's a double yikes. And we can't continue to count their road losses till they get...
Yikes.
Thank you.
Yikes.
We can't continue to stack up road losses, rack up road losses, count road losses until they get back out on the road and away from the desert. But yeah, that's a major league record that they still own and could very well keep adding to. So it's a rough time to be a Diamondbacks fan. However, you've got the Phoenix Suns and Devin Booker's first ever triple-double. Pretty impressive to see what they've done even without Chris Paul. And what was most important to Booker, getting the win, of course, but also protecting their home court against the Clippers.
You know, we want to protect home court, you know, so that was big for us to come out and secure that one. You know, I don't know if I showed that much emotion, you know, through the playoffs that much, but, you know, not having Chris out there and it, you know, being a high-intense game, you know, we wanted that one bad, so... You know, it's obviously only one. We know what they're capable of and what they've done. Came back down 0-2 from, you know, their past two series. So, you know, we got to stay locked in.
For sure. So the Clippers have their own bit of history, and their path is an unconventional one always. It's the Clippers on their way to their first ever conference finals. What do? Well, they start out 0-2 in both of the previous series, only to come roaring back. This is a Clippers team that likes to play with fire, being a little tongue-in-cheek here, but they don't do anything the easy way, ever. Last week, though, when we were talking about teams that have taught you not to trust them, some of you mentioned the Clippers. I even mentioned the Clippers. I'm not sure if I can trust them still, even after they came back to win those first two series. And actually, that would have been before they closed out Utah. So here they are, and they don't have Kawhi Leonard, and we've got no real concrete update on Kawhi, but he's not in Phoenix. So at the very least, they're going to have to play game two without him. And this is a pretty good first game in this series. They were tied a good portion of that fourth quarter, a couple of pretty good runs there by the Phoenix Suns and that home crowd behind them. But that series, I would be okay with it going the distance as long as we can get Chris Paul back, because I feel like he's the sentimental part of this. I do believe there'd be a lot of sports fans and a lot of athletes, a lot of guys inside the NBA fraternity and around the world of sports who'd be rooting for Chris Paul because he's never played in an NBA Finals. So Get well soon, CP3.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.